Episode 151 of the TV Dudes, recorded September 28th, 2017.
Mutiny!
So guys, I don't know if you know this, but we have overthrown Grant. He's not here. There are no adults in the room.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
time. Oh, I thought because of my, I just figured I was at the kid table.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that there is no adult
table. There is no adult table tonight.
Wow.
Yeah.
So who's driving this bus?
I'm driving the bus.
I think the bus is just in neutral on a steep hill.
Yeah, that's. I think that's best case scenario for
like
us.
No one blocked the tires on the bus.
Yeah, because the thing about being one of the kids is that it's fun when the grown-ups are gone, but you actually want them just not to be looking. If shit actually goes wrong, I'd like a grown-up to be
around. Yeah, we don't want to go Lord of the Flies here.
New.
Yeah.
New.
So we are the TV Dudes. I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
Ashley.
And today we're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery, as well as BoJack Horseman Season 4. And as always, we have our news and all kind of listener questions and all kinds of stuff like that.
Things
for
that
you.
Grant usually,
yeah, handles. that I just realized I hadn't pulled up. So before we get to all that, though, we got to do a little housekeeping as always. So first of all, if you like us, you can go to iTunes, you can give us a 5-star review, and whatever you write, if you give us a good review, we will read it on the air. Grant will read whatever. He's not here, so guys, whatever you want him to say. If you want to include in your review that Lost is the worst show of all time and I'm finally admitting it to you all, you can put that in and he's going to read it.
People have done similar stuff.
So give us a 5-star review and we appreciate that. If you want to support us monetarily, which you can do, you can go over to patreon.com/TVDudes and you can throw us like a buck an episode. That comes up to $3 or $4 a month, you know, as much as you pay for maybe a beer or something. And that helps us to, you know, keep our, keep the studio going here, to, pay for our hosting costs and, all, you know, go to television festivals so we can get more coverage for you, all kinds of stuff like that. And, we have 2 new patrons this week. We have everyone's favorite evil twin, Jonathan Huffnagel. Thank you, Jonathan. And we have the lovely and talented Maxine November. And thank you, Maxine. And we also like to remind you guys that we are part of a network here, a TV network, a network called PermanentRecord.com.
PermanentRecord.com.
And we like to promote the other podcasts on this network. And so this week we are promoting Star Trek Discovery Pod, which, Ashley, you know a little something about the Star Trek Discovery Pod.
I do. Couple things about it.
Yeah.
One, it's about Star Trek Discovery.
What?
Yeah, it's going to blow your minds. Two, you'll recognize a few of the voices. It's us again.
Oh, yeah.
And three is one of our Facebook followers kindly pointed out, if you go to our Facebook page, the font that Discovery, Star Trek Discovery Pod is written in kind of makes it look like it says Star Trek Discovery Poo. Which, I'll be honest, now that you've pointed out, that person's not only correct, but I'm leaving it.
You like it better?
I like it better.
Yeah. You don't like being on STD poo?
No. I don't mind at all.
I have listened to the first couple episodes of Star Trek Discovery Pod. I am not on that podcast, so I can, with an unbiased eye, say, I think it's really good. And you guys should all go listen to it. And you should give them a 5-star review and write nice things about them. Because
yes.
I don't know if you guys know this, kind of a competitive space, the Star Trek Discovery space.
It is. I'm worried that some of the listeners won't be as forgiving.
Yeah.
They're
like, say, if someone didn't know the difference between a Vulcan and a Klingon.
Oh, that person wouldn't see the next day.
Right.
That would be his last Stardate.
That'd be rough. It's almost like if someone was a Star Trek pod and had never seen much Star Trek, like didn't know what a Tribble was,
mm-hmm.
didn't really know Cardassians were a thing.
Nope, didn't have
any idea. That'd be weird.
It would. It would also be strange if while he was doing the thing where you can donate Patreon money to us, he
yes.
asked us what the Federation credits were, and we had to point out that we had moved past
There's no money in the future, yes, yes.
Grant is not a Star Trek fan, guys.
I was just interesting, like, wait, there's not money, though.
Right? I know, there's not money. Everyone knows that, except Grant, who does know it now.
But as Clyde, the Star Trek nerd in the room,
he knows
by default, pointed out there is gold pressed latinum.
There is.
So
there is.
So you can donate Cold Press Latinum to the Star Trek Discovery Pod, and they'll appreciate it.
We will. Thank you.
All right. So let's go to listener questions. Every week we put up a questions post on Facebook, and you guys give us questions. We give you answers. Some of them are good. Some of them are not. Hopefully we're going to more good than not. So we're going to start off here with a question from Ken Yabanez. He says, hi. I've been listening to you guys since you started the podcast, and a reason why I do my own set of podcasts. Aww. So my question is, with adult cartoons such as BoJack Horseman and Rick and Morty, do you think the market for adult cartoons could ever become saturated in the near future?
I'm going to have to go no on this one. For me, it's a little like saying, are we ever going to become saturated with comedies or dramas or anything like that, right? It's when it comes to a format thing, if the content that you're making, if the stories that you want to tell, if the characters are compelling in the space that you put them in, I don't think people are going to mind. They're always going to love a good drama. They're always going to love a good comedy. They're always going to love a good cartoon.
Right.
Or yeah. Live action.
Yeah, I mean, anything can get oversaturated, but only if they get too niche. Like if there end up being 10 dystopian mad scientist in the family sitcoms, then yeah, we're going to run that into the ground. Like, you know, like when Family Guy appeared after Simpsons and then American Dad just sucked.
I don't think that was saturation problems.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll be nice and call that a saturation.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, anything could be saturated. But, yeah, I think it's the same. It would be like saying, are we going to get tired of procedurals in general? Or, like, no, there's always going to be room for a well-done one. I don't think, yeah, cartoons, yeah. Just because it's animated and just because it's geared towards more market than just a cartoon for toys, like an advertisement for toys. Because, I mean, I assume that that's what we mean by the difference between child cartoons and adult cartoons.
Whether there's toys for it or not?
Is like, no, whether like it's entire, I mean, the cartoons I grew up on as a kid, we grew up on as a kid, were just straight advertisements.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like,
they had to change laws because of G.I. Joe and Transformers.
Yeah. And so
Hasbro was going to have an entire generation wrapped around their fingers.
They do.
They do. I've seen Rise of Cobra twice.
Hasbro owns my ass.
I saw the Gym and the Holograms. That wasn't them, was it?
It might have been. No, I think that was DIC or whatever it was.
All right. Gen Xer, so edgy, so owned by Hasbro. Oh, but this question does remind me of something.
Yes.
So as we know, Netflix has like a million shows coming out tomorrow.
Right.
They already have 2 million up.
Right. They have 46 shows before the end of the year.
Yeah. So obviously Netflix knows I love Archer. And so they keep pushing, what is it called, Pacific Heat on me?
Okay. They keep showing up in mine as well.
No.
Not the same fucking show.
Not the same fucking show. And I will say that while I don't think we're going to have necessarily have a saturation of, you know, good adult cartoons necessarily, just because we liked a cartoon doesn't mean that you should make a knockoff of it.
Yeah.
Like that I think is a problem.
But like I said, walking out of Wonder Woman, I had friends that had legit criticisms of Wonder Woman, and I said, mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's 500 piece of shit male driven action movies that I got to watch as a kid.
Yeah.
And so what? It's like there should be, I am fine with the saturation of this because it means that we will get a real cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if there's 500 shit knockoffs of something that's working, yeah, keep it going.
Agreed. Justin Zarian says, so Star Trek Discovery did pretty well in its CBS ratings this Sunday, 9.6 million for the premiere.
Man, and apparently, we should get him. He does his homework. He's got figures.
He's in school for this.
And apparently set records for single day subscriptions on CBS All Access. Do you feel the ratings would have been just as high if CBS hadn't created an artificial urgency to watch it live before it went straight to streaming? And do you see a genuine concern with their drug dealer like mentality of giving audiences a sample to make them pay for more than other channels may imitate? Love the podcast, by the way, and keep up the great work. What do you guys think?
I don't know if, I mean, I wasn't aware that I never considered watching it live on CBS. Like, I ended up watching it live through their app because the app wouldn't play the episode. Like, you had to watch it live.
Right.
Until it was done. But I'm sure that marketing push probably helped with that surge. It certainly wasn't everybody's thrilled response to the technological leap that the CBS All Access app is. Like, that's a terrible platform. A friend of mine nailed it. Like, Star Trek Discovery is a classier show than that app.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's – I honestly think that the Star Trek Discovery was going to be an event regardless. Like, I almost – the question that Justin's getting at, I think, and the answer is I think they might have done better had it not been All Access, if it had been just like a regular premiere somewhere.
Yeah, I think so.
Or if they made some kind of deal with Hulu or Amazon to stream through them.
Yeah. I mean, at least Star Trek doesn't have like an older generation of fans who might not want to stream stuff, but still might want to watch a new Star
Trek. Right. Star Trek is new and edgy and doesn't have a pre-existing audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Alec Miracle says, TV dudes, we all know Game of Thrones is a great show. A show that has balls, unless you're an Unsullied, and guts, or lack thereof,
to kill people
and and maim characters. It's a show that if I didn't have a happy ending we want, or even a bittersweet ending, I'd be okay with that. Not everything has to end like a fairy tale. My question is, do you wish for more TV shows to take as many similar risks as Thrones and not be so nice to its characters? I kind of wish Lost had done something similar, even though its character kill count was sky high, especially toward the end of the show. Please note that Game of Thrones kills its character because the plot asks for it, not for shock value like it's done today on some shows. Should everybody else be more bloodthirsty and ruthless like Game of Thrones?
I will say that it's nice watching Game of Thrones, and for that matter, you know, reading Game of Thrones, because you don't know that everyone's going to make it out okay. You know what I'm saying? So it's like when you're watching television shows, usually you're like, oh, our main characters are in a bind. There's no consequence to the shows that we watch. They're fun, but there's no consequence.
Yeah. Right, unless you're Michelle Yeoh and you're a guest star, and then you're like, oh, she's not going to be okay.
Spoilers! I'm just kidding. Yeah. Well, when it says it's guest starring, that's kind of spoiler.
And for all of Game of Thrones ballyhooed, you don't know who's going to die, it started the show with Sean Bain.
Yeah.
We should have seen that
coming. I started watching it, and like other people in the room with me were like, well, how do you know he's going to die? Like, he's played by him.
Yeah.
I'm honestly amazed Ned Stark made it through the pilot.
That's actually one of my only complaints about The Expanse.
Yeah.
Is that because they've been, you know, on the verge of blowing up so many times and it hasn't happened, I've now learned that the main characters are safe in that show. Like in most shows. But I've learned that they're safe.
Yeah.
And...
So you're in favor. You think we could use a little more edge in other shows.
Yeah, I think so.
I think the problem comes, I think, in the practicalities of contracts and all that kind of thing. You know, you don't have to recast every season and all that kind of stuff.
True.
But maybe you can. It's worked for Game of Thrones.
Well, and with such a public eye on the backside of the business now, it's almost impossible to keep people's job movements. Like Game of Thrones has had to work extremely hard to keep some of these things from. I mean, the Jon Snow thing.
Yeah.
Like to keep it hidden that, you know, well, what's Kit Harington going to do next year? Someone's going to notice.
Yeah.
If he didn't take any movies or something. I don't think every show needs to get edgy in terms of like dealing with a sudden death.
Right.
But I would definitely be glad for more shows to take chances on narrative stuff that isn't like utterly predictable. Because like you said, it's like watching old cartoons and seeing like the one discolor, or, like differently colored rock and like, oh, that one's going to fall. You know, I don't want to be able to, like, pick out the character of... too often watching procedurals, you'll see the cops will interview four people. One of them is an actor you've seen before. That man is the villain. or we'll come back later. Like, where you go, oh, no, I've seen you in two things. I don't know your name, but I've seen you in two things, so I know you're...
Right. It's like the Law and Order thing, where you spot the guy and,
And so it is nice every once in a while to have a character that, like... Wow, I can't believe they did that to that actor. Like, I can't believe that contractually in the world of Hollywood, you let that narrative choice happen.
Like, there's an episode of Criminal Minds where Will Wheaton is the unsub, so to speak. And I had a feeling then that we probably got that one right the first time when they called him in for questioning. But
all right, Jacob Eisner wants to know, hey dudes, what did you guys gal think of the controversial third episode of The Orville? I believe they handled the subject material very well, and so did one of my transgender friends back in Austin who recommended it. And will you continue watching The Orville on a regular basis now? Did anyone besides me watch the third episode of The Orville?
I did.
Really? Okay.
I will continue watching The Orville because I enjoyed episodes 1 and 2, and there wasn't anything wrong with 3, but 3 was the flattest one.
That's what I thought.
So far.
Everybody's talking about like the third episode
like
is where
this
it turns
one
a corner.
Galvanized it or something. It did not turn a corner.
I was like, I thought it was the most hacky of all of them.
Maybe in... turned a corner maybe in dealing with subject, but I don't know. I was told that it handled the subject matter well. It's not subject matter that I have particular way to decide is good or bad.
Yeah.
It seemed fairly tasteful. There's a couple of things on the plot line for the single gendered species that I kind of wish somebody had yelled out. Like I was a little surprised that it was taken as well as it was.
Yeah.
The plot setup is that one of the people on the ship is a single gendered species.
Yeah.
They're not. A single gendered species.
They're two men.
Two gendered species that has ended one gender. surgically.
Yeah, so basically the
No one brings this up.
The two men give birth to a female, to a daughter, and then they're like, well, we're going to reassign. And the doctor's like, fuck you, I'm not going to do it. Transgender surgery on a on an infant. And so then like they bring in their race, and there's like a big trial. And yeah, I had the same thing. I was like, they definitely talk about it, but yeah, it was – it's messed up.
All I kept thinking was, okay, so if – she was albino, and we thought that all of your alien race had one color skin, and it turns out some of your alien race is another color skin, and we just weren't around for the history of when y'all were half and half.
Right.
And you've just surgically bleached. In no fucking way would that be okay. Yeah. Would that plot work?
Yeah.
Like, not okay. And I got to the end of the Orville episode and went, okay, this wasn't – A, wasn't your funniest episode by any stretch.
Yeah.
But B, I'm not sure you handled that well at all.
Yeah.
Then I was told that it was handled well. I have no fucking clue.
I thought that it was dicey subject matter to get into, and I actually thought they did a pretty good job with it, given that McFarlane is not really known for his sensitivity on subjects.
No.
But I did wonder, and I'm interested to hear – I mean, one transgender person checking in doesn't really give us any indication, but I'm interested to hear if there was any kind of backlash, because – it seemed like getting into dicey territory, and I'm not sure the story rewarded the risk.
I didn't feel like they came away from it having said anything important enough to have done that episode.
Yeah. I also will say that I am rapidly getting to the point with the Orville where it does feel like I'm just watching watered down Next Generation, and I haven't seen all of Next Generation. So I may just start watching that on Netflix or on Hulu or whatever instead of watching.
I like the effects better.
It's not – yeah, the effects are better. So to answer the second part of the question, Les is sticking with it. I'm still on board, but wavering.
There's really nothing else new happening each week right now.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing I can find on Hulu with their new interface.
Jonathan Habmichael says, hi, dudes. When will we get to see Doug Jones act up without a metric ton of makeup and prosthetics? He is always the fish person, the vampire, or the bye-bye man. Where's the regular guy roles for this lanky fellow?
It's true.
You know, I want to he wakes up in the morning, he stretches, grabs a cup of coffee, goes out, checks the mail, you know, hello to his neighbor, comes in. Yeah, just a day in the life of.
Is it possible that Doug Jones without makeup is just like a skeleton?
That's what I was thinking earlier when I read that question, was like, what if there's like not a Doug Jones? There's only like half of a Doug Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
Every morning he has to wake up and put on some kind of prosthetic costume.
What if... maybe it's one of those like reverse Uncanny Valley things where it's like usually when you see a person in those kinds of animations or costumes or makeup kind of set up with the CGI over it potentially on top as well, we get a little bit weirded out. But if we saw him, it'd have the opposite effect.
Yes.
It'd be like, the fuck am I looking at?
Yeah, I think you're right.
And they're worried about taking that risk.
Yeah, so he's got to be a vampire fishman.
Yeah.
He's freaking amazing at it. Like,
he's so good.
I mean, I feel like part of it is the same reason that like Peter Weller was able to do RoboCop so well. He was just freakishly emaciated for the role and could fit into the suit and make it not look like a robot suit on top of a normal dude.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the benefit here is that dude is just weirdly shaped. I mean, he moves like a fish person. Like, I don't know what school was like for him, but it was tough.
Yeah. And, you know, in our... as we mentioned, we have another podcast where we talk about Star Trek Discovery. And one of the things that we were kind of talking about is that it seemed a little bit like the makeup got in the way of the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pointed out that Saru, the scientist character that they're talking about there, did not have that problem.
That's because Doug Jones lives in makeup.
Yes. And that was our conclusion. We're like, yeah, but we can't make that comparison.
Oh, man, because Saru's lines are so casual.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh, yeah, I do this every day.
Yeah. He says a little every snarky day, shit to day. The side. It's great.
Yeah, no problem. So we can't – yeah, so we still don't know because – don't have a normal person to test it against.
Jordan Worth Cobb wants to know, which actor have each of you always wanted to see play a Star Trek captain? I love this question, by the way, but I did not have an answer ready for it. I was hoping somebody else did.
I was ashamed that the answer that popped into my head has been in Star Trek. Bruce Greenwood just looks like he ought to captain a starship.
Yeah.
And they put him in the new movies.
He was Pike.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jeff Bridges.
Oh, yeah, Jeff Bridges.
I mean, granted, even in interviews, like not doing movies, Jeff Bridges looks like what I figure God tries to look like in the mirror. Like, he just looks biblically awesome.
Right.
But yeah, I want him to run a starship. You know that's a cool ship.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I feel like I can offer a somewhat, you know, maybe borderline canned answer, like Ian McKellen, I think would be good.
Oh, yeah.
But probably for a lot of the same reasons that Patrick Stewart is. And I'm a TNG fan, kind of like my favorite. But I think he would do a bang-up job. or even just as an admiral.
Yeah.
Potentially, because we always lose the admirals. You know, yeah. They come in, something happens to them, and then they're gone.
Well, they're all dicks. Yeah. All the admirals are dicks. You get promoted, you become a dick.
Yeah, I'm also wondering if, like, the shining parts of even the bad X-Men movies, I often feel like, was the connection between Patrick Stewart and McKellen.
Yeah,
I agree. Might be coloring this a bit.
So, I have three.
All right, lay them on me.
Gillian Anderson.
She'd be great. Oh, yeah.
I would love to have her, and I want Duchovny to be, like, her first officer or her science officer or something.
Yeah, he'd have to be Mud. He'd have to be Harry Mud.
Oh my god. Tony Todd.
Yes, I would watch Tony Todd.
Tony Todd would be a great Star Trek captain, right? And Donald Logue.
I was worried you were going to pick my next one.
Okay, go. What you got?
Judi Dench.
Oh shit! Yeah.
Yeah, she. I'd follow her. I'd follow her a lot of places.
Judi Dench could show up with like a cardboard box that says Starship on it. She'd get aboard. I'm jumping in that box.
So when they decided that they were just going to remake Wrath of Khan,
yeah,
and then lie about it for a year, why did we not just gender flip this and have Judi Dench go up against Helen Mirren as Khan?
Oh my god, that would have been amazing.
Because there is no god. That's why.
I now have to see Helen Mirren in the Ricardo Montalban.
Wes, I now have to live in a world where that idea is in my head, but it doesn't exist.
You know
That's what you did.
You know what's great about the universe's theory, though, the quantum mechanics theory, is that there is a universe where that does happen.
Oh, God.
And we're going to have to find a way to get there.
Yeah, or at least get streaming services from there.
Yeah, yeah. Finally, Jonathan Huffnagel has a question. Good evening, boils and ghouls. By the way, you guys should settle in because Jonathan Huffnagel asks long-ass questions.
Oh, I believe this one has a voice. You should be reading it in as well.
I don't remember the voice. Grant did the voice. I can't do that voice.
Good evening, boys and ghouls. Something like that.
I can't do it. I'm sorry. First, I would like to congratulate Grant and his fellow podcasters on the fantastic premiere podcast for Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek IV, Whales Go Home. Brilliant. I have returned with yet another Halloween-themed question worthy of the Crypt Keeper himself.
Yes!
I could not find any zombie werewolves, but there certainly are many zombie shows. It's nice to see even Tales from the Crypt is getting a reboot. I wonder if the Crypt Keeper qualifies as a zombie.
Yeah.
I have to allow it.
Right now, you each have been given your own personal Evil Morty-grade portal gun with a limited fuel supply. My evil buddy and I have rigged them to send each of you into separate TV universes or even specific episodes of your choice. However, there is a small catch.
Shit.
You will be the herald of the zombie apocalypse in that television dimension. Knowing death follows you, what TV worlds or episodes would you each individually visit and infect? And what zombie-spawned universe would you wish to live in as a final destination? P.S. Do not call me an Evil Morty for backup, as we are too busy modifying the TARDIS into a similar herald of zombies.
Two things. I love this question. I was immediately afraid for what happened to the doctor that they have the TARDIS. I assume that he is like drowned in the swimming pool.
Yeah, probably
or
so.
Something. And it's, if I'm understanding this correctly, we are the Galactus Herald of like world ending.
Yes.
We're bringing the zombie plague with us.
That
right?
is correct.
So, yeah. So we're ruining a set of shows and then we're picking the one we want
to live in and defeat the zombies in, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Or die.
Oh, okay. Wait, so maybe I'm misinterpreting this. I thought I was being gifted a zombie horde to dispose.
Well, that's where my first thought was, too.
Because I was going to say the Big Bang Theory, obviously.
That was also, yeah, I was going to say,
okay.
Give a person
a zombie horde or teach a person to infect with the zombie virus.
Yeah.
Oh, is this like one of those things where it's like if I give a man a fish, he sucks my dick, but if you teach someone to
turn a bunch of other people into fish people, then you have a fish people army.
Also, that is a different version of that I've ever heard.
Yeah. Different universe.
Oh, different universe.
Yeah, quantum mechanics says that there's a universe in which that's how that saying goes.
No, I think
it's probably the same universe in which Judi Dench and Helen Mirren are stars of StarCast.
So there's pros and cons to that universe.
So the question is, yes, what universes do you wish to infect with a zombie apocalypse, and which one do you think you could safely land in and stay in? Where do you think you have your best chance?
My opening and closing in universes are set. It's the swath of destruction I want in between that I'm having a hard time deciding on. Because I would start with the OA. If she wants to come back from the dead, fucking try it. And I think I would move through. The only one I know I would have to hit is Lost, because I think that island would go bug shit crazy if there were also a zombie virus loose.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Like, whatever else is happening on that island, all of the other plot lines and everything, but, oh, also, all previous plot lines keep trying to crawl back up out of the ground. And
zombie polar bear.
Yeah. Zombie polar bear, zombie obviously. Everybody Dharma Initiative. I think they'd be great. And then I spent a lot of time trying to figure out like what comfort show I could survive in. Like Cheers is in a populated area in a downstairs bar with glass windows.
There's you could drink a lot.
But yeah. I kept thinking, like, I could go night court.
We've tested that plan, though. In Shaun of the Dead, it doesn't work.
That's true.
I don't want to be in New York. Like, I don't want to be in night court.
Yeah.
I don't want to be trapped in that building.
Northern exposure.
That was what I settled on.
Yeah.
Northern exposure. There's hardly anybody there. Yep. Me and Chris in the morning can hold this shit down.
So, Ashley, you've correctly pinpointed that you start Ground Zero at Big Bang Theory. That's where I was, too.
Okay,
start
so there. I get to destroy a place with my zombie horde.
And you can go as many... You've got limited fuel, but you can go a few places.
So I go a few places and drop the zombie horde on them.
Yes,
yes. Okay, so let's see. I'm definitely, obviously, going to go Big Bang Theory.
Yep.
Does ABC have any shows coming out soon?
No,
okay, whichever ones came out a few weeks ago, I'd drop it there.
Okay. Yep.
Probably. and then the second one is where I stand.
Where do you land and try to live the rest of your life in, or that you think you maybe could beat back the zombie apocalypse?
Well, I'm torn. On the one hand, I feel like I could put them in Black Mirror and we could just try to do our best with everybody else.
Yeah.
And it would be a little poetic.
Yeah.
But I don't want to live in that world.
Yeah,
I
don't blame you.
I already do. It's hard. So let's see. I guess, I think Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad might work because there's those big swaths of desert outside of like Albuquerque.
It's true. I bet Heisenberg could come up with some good zombie killing.
You find some resourceful people, I bet, in the
Better Call Saul, it's like a believable world in which some clever people, I think, could set up factions.
Yeah, the only problem I see is that probably what's going to happen is somehow Heisenberg or Saul are going to sacrifice you and they're going to survive.
I would be the weak link, for sure. Yeah. I would be the red shirt.
So since you already started the Big Bang Theory and took care of that.
Young Sheldon.
I think Young Sheldon can live to live.
I'm sorry. It just occurred to me that in that scenario of Breaking Bad, Huel would really wait forever.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Like undead Huel in a motel room.
Yeah.
I don't want a brains, but the cops said not to leave.
Oh, holy shit. What about that episode of The Simpsons, Futurama, where the dog is waiting for Fry?
Oh, my God, yes.
Why would you do that?
I'm so sorry, you guys. I'm so sorry. We need a grown-up. This is why we have Ryan.
This is why we need a grown-up.
I'm using my safe word, and there's no grown-ups to come in and help.
So I would start at 2.5 fucking dead men is where I would start. So they're just all going to die. And then where I would end, I'm going Rick and Morty. Because I feel like, first of all, if you can find Rick, you're probably fine. And if not, there's probably a portal gun lying around somewhere you can get out. You don't have to use Evil Morty's zombie-infected portal gun. You find a portal gun, you get out of that universe, you leave it behind.
No, this is the lawyer answer. I don't feel like you can say this.
You don't think so?
I think you're cheating.
All right.
I think you're making a wildly off-base assumption by saying you'll be fine.
Oh, no, I'm going to die. That's probably true.
Like,
yeah.
I think finding Rick will definitely stop the zombie apocalypse you started.
Yes.
Like, he will turn and probably, like, stupid and stop it. Like, just with a wave of his hand. You will probably get killed in the process of it stopping. Like, I don't think Rick has any concern. Or he may just go, oh, this world's fucked, and walk.
Yeah, see, that's something more likely. But you're right. It's a literal answer. So I'm just going to land in the world of you're the worst and bang Lindsay before I die.
God, that is a good call. That is a good call.
Yeah, I support that.
So we got some news to go over this week, and I'm just going to run through it. Grant is not here, but he did provide us with the news links. And so if any of this is terrible, blame Grant. So Shane Black, apparently. Did you guys see the movie Nice Guys? You see Shane Black's Nice Guys?
I have not seen that.
Okay. I did. I really liked it. It's set in the 70s. It's a sort of buddy action comedy. It involves gasoline and porn stars.
Was Gosling
and Russell Crowe as a sort of a pair of private eyes. Well, it's going to get a gender flipped TV version apparently contemporary take. So I'm not quite sure what makes it the nice guys at that point.
Okay, so they're making a buddy cop thing? So
they're making a buddy cop thing.
They're just making a different buddy cop they're making show. A different,
and they're calling it the Nice Girls, maybe? I don't... like.
That's
the,
got a whole other connotation.
That's weird.
That
so,
is a weird name.
So yeah, the, but...
I thought
but,
they'd call it Rizzolian Isles.
Joel Silver is involved. He was one of the producers involved on it. Michael Diliberti from 30 Minutes or Less, whatever the hell that is set to write and executive produce. This is weird as fuck. And yet, if you give me a sort of, you know, comedic-tinged, female-led private eye show, I'm potentially in.
I'm on the premise of, yeah. of them doing another female-led buddy cop show. I just I'm confused.
But how is this the Nice Guys? Yeah.
Why did anyone have to pay to option Nice Guys for
That's
this?
Really weird. Maybe Joel Silver, you know, he's involved in both. Maybe he's getting some kind of deal with it. The Russo brothers, who are producing literally everything, are also producing a Deadly Class comic book TV series at Sci-Fi. Deadly Class is a book by Rick Remender that is basically about a assassin school for homeless teens. Mm. So they are recruited, they become assassins, and they're working on doing a TV version of it. So they pick up orphans, they train them to be assassins, and they set them loose. And it's basically it's set in the high school, so there's like the high school drama aspect of it, and then there's them going out and getting missions and that kind of thing. I'm curious.
I've liked pretty much everything the Russos have touched so far in their entire career.
Yeah, we'll see if this happens. I mean, like I said, the Russos they're on Night Flyers by George R. R. Martin. They're driving the Marvel Universe at this point. They're working on Quantum and Woody. They're doing an adaptation of the horror game Little Nightmares. So I don't know.
They're doing Quantum and Woody.
They're doing Quantum and Woody. Yeah.
All right. That's cool.
So we'll see if this actually happens. But I'm curious. HBO has ordered a pilot for a space comedy from the creator of Veep, Armando Iannucci.
Who is also the creator of In the Loop.
Yes, he is.
Think of it.
Yep. I'm in.
Yeah.
It's set on a spaceship. Supposed to be starting photography next year. I don't honestly care about the rest. I'll watch whatever it is. Yeah.
I mean, you had me on, we're going to make a space show. Like I'm at least looking up from my desk at this point, but yeah, you combine those two things, like whatever next show that dude's doing, I'm going to watch some of.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. American Flag is another comic development getting TV. It's, I believe going to Hulu or I think they're not sure yet. It's being developed by Europa Corps, which is the company behind Taken and The Transporter, and also, I believe, James Bond's villains. And the American flag is sort of a dystopian future where American government has fled to Mars. The government left behind is this massive corporation, and it's sort of this satirical take on corrupt politics and cops in the future.
I don't think I've ever enjoyed a Howard Chaykin book I've read.
Me neither.
Either the story is... like somewhat odious and set 50 years in the past in terms of social mores or something, or its art is weird.
Yeah.
But one of the two things always fails it for me. The best thing he ever did was The Shadow, and only because The Property was better than him.
Right. Amazon has announced a whole bunch of genre titles they're doing. So they're doing Larry Niven's Ringworld, Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash, and Greg Rucka's Lazarus. That's a whole bunch of dystopian sci-fi.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about Lazarus. You had to tell me about that one, but those other two caught my eye. I mean, somebody's finally doing Ringworld, for God's sake.
Yeah, and Ringworld, I mean, Ringworld isn't dystopian, I guess. Ringworld is sort of big, epic,
it's just big
space
sci-fi.
Opera, right?
Yeah, if they did The Expanse, I got to think this is because The Expanse worked,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I have seen them screw up Riverworld at least twice now, so yeah, hopefully.
That's true. Have you read Ringworld at all, Ashley?
No.
Me neither, but you know there's Uplifted Dolphins.
What?
Yeah, there's like uplifted animals are like the big thing, and but it seems like it's like the big expansive sci-fi, which good for Amazon to be kind of ambitious. Snow Crash is I think cyberpunkish.
Snow Crash is a lot of shit.
Okay,
but yeah, Neal Stephenson's books always just swing wide. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
And Lazarus is a comic series that I love. It's basically the 1% have taken over all of America and all of the world and divided everybody else into waste. Basically, if you don't work for the family, they just call you waste. And it's Rucka's a guy who loves his politics, and it's a very well thought out and scary world that he's done. And Lazarus, the title becomes from, each family has this sort of enforcer that's like their big boss, their big culmination of their technology. So the Lazarus of the family that's sort of the main characters, they have genetic enhancements. So she like regenerates and is like genetically engineered to be this ultimate warrior. There's one that's a cyborg. They all do different, you know, aspects of things. Like one of them is in medical technology and one of them is in military technology and that kind of thing. And it's all about sort of the conflicts between these big mega corporations and how shitty it is to live in this world. So it's built for TV, and I'm super excited. And Rucka is actually going to be adapting it, which is really cool.
Between all this stuff and Mega City 1,
yeah,
and I mean, there's so much crazy television of properties I never thought I would get to see adapted. I mean, statistically, at least some of them have to some not of it, suck,
and some of them have to actually happen. Yes,
yes, and some of them have to actually happen.
Finally, Tom Hanks is going to star in a David S. Pumpkins animated special. So that's the thing that's going to happen.
I mean, David S. Pumpkins didn't sound funny on paper, and then I watched it and it was, I guess, right what we needed that week.
David S. Pumpkins, when I watched it, it didn't do anything for me, and then all my friends loved it, and the more I watched it, the more I liked it, and now I like it.
When I heard it pitched as they were trying to make the Santa Claus of Halloween.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, I can kind of from that aspect see where you might get a 30-minute show out of trying to make him the Santa Claus of Halloween when Halloween doesn't need a Santa Claus.
So the David S. Pumpkins Halloween special will air on NBC on Saturday, October 28th at 11:30 p.m. Tom Hanks will be voicing it. Mikey Day and Bobby Moynihan will be voicing something, as will Peter Dinklage.
Sure.
So... okay, yeah, that's a thing that's going to happen.
You know, I hope it's like a Scooby-Doo episode where it's like, the Harlem Globetrotters, what are you doing here?
Oh my God, I also hope for that.
Yes.
Peter Dinklage,
yes.
What are you doing here? And he's like, hey kids, yes. I'm here to teach you the real meaning of Halloween.
It needs to be the last 5 minutes of the Bill Murray Christmas special.
Yes. So BoJack Horseman season 4 actually came out a couple weeks ago on Netflix, but I've been saving it for Ashley because I know how Ashley loves BoJack Horseman.
Oh my God, I love that show. I watched the entire thing in a day.
Did you really?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It took me a couple of days. I can't watch BoJack Horseman a day unless I'm going to end that day drinking.
Yeah, you know, it was an evening of personal reflection for me.
I have a hard time watching a lot of Steven Universe in a row. I get melancholy and weird on that. I don't know if I could binge watch.
Dude, it was a weird day. It was a weird day.
Is it just in with like lighting matches and watching them burn while you drink whiskey? Like,
yeah. So I'm a bullet girl. As you mentioned the whiskey, and you know, sometimes it's like. I don't know, like the unseen music video to that song, like "Hello, Darkness, My Old Friend," and I'm just watching episode after episode of BoJack Horseman.
This season, I thought the big stories are Mr. Peanut Butter running for governor,
yes,
and BoJack having a daughter,
yes, and his whole like family backstory
and all the backstory in his family. Which, man, that was dark.
God. Well, if we're going to talk about so it's super dark,
yeah.
But one sort of smaller thing that just like stabbed me in the heart, but it's not key to any of those larger things that we're probably going to talk about, those larger kind of themes that went throughout the entire season. So I want to say it's like episode 4 or 5, somewhere in there. It really focuses on Princess Caroline.
Oh, yeah.
And she has decided that she wants to have a baby. Mm-hmm. It's not going well. Things fall apart between her and her boyfriend. And it leads up to her just having a shit bag of a day.
Yeah.
But the episode is set up such that it's told in flashback by someone who is supposed to be her granddaughter.
That was mean.
I think it's the Ruthie episode.
That was mean.
So I'm watching this and, you know, so far BoJack Horseman, like many, like Black Mirror did it too. They've been very good about peppering in the sweet story just when you thought you couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
And so when there was this story told in flashback from the perspective of a granddaughter,
like,
I thought
it's all going to be okay.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be San Junipero episode in Black Mirror. I thought that's what was coming.
Yeah.
And then it gets to the end of the episode, and you find out that one of Princess Caroline's coping mechanisms when she's having a particularly dark time is to imagine that her current situation is being told in flashback to her granddaughter's class by her granddaughter.
Yeah.
Because it means that everything must have turned out okay for her in the end.
That was so mean.
Holy shit. Holy shit. My heart broke.
Yeah.
How did you do that to me?
That was really, really mean.
Oh my God.
Of all the stories this season, I actually think Princess Caroline is the most heartbreaking.
So tragic.
Because the stuff with BoJack and his daughter gets dark. And the stuff with BoJack and his mom gets dark, but there's little bits of light that shine through there.
Yeah, you know, I really think the story, I mean, obviously the story is, the whole season, the whole show, the whole franchise has done a really good job of kind of telling a lot of different sorts of stories. You know, Todd's asexual, just like different types of voices that you don't hear a lot. But one thing that I think that BoJack Horseman does really well, and especially this season, is you kind of get to see sort of like the dark world that a lot of these female characters occupy.
Yeah.
With his mom, and to a lesser extent with his little sister, and definitely with Princess Caroline.
Yeah. Yeah, I think seeing into BoJack's mom has always been presented, and she's great, by the way. I forget who the actress is. She was on Just Shoot Me, and I'm blanking on her name right now, but she's been great. But she's always been portrayed as sort of this harsh, rich woman, you know, like Lucille Bluth, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to go back and see where that all started and the thing that happens to her mom.
Oh, my God.
Is like, it's the thing that really amazed me about BoJack is it's so dark. It's pitch black. And yet every episode makes me laugh. There was stuff to laugh at every episode, too.
Yeah, for sure. It was
whether it's the background gags or the use of the animals.
And I haven't gotten tired of the background gags,
no, me
which
neither.
I was a little worried about because when you have, you know, a cartoon where you can always have something funny, you know, bird people flying through the background, it hasn't grown tiresome. I still like
love
it.
That MSNBC is SEA and that their Keith Olbermann is a whale.
I
don't get tired of that. I also love their Woodchuck mayor.
Yeah.
I love that character. Or no, governor. He's the governor.
He's the governor.
I love that character. The bit about his hands getting replaced and that it goes through like three iterations and that he's better at this job than anyone's going to be.
Oh, I mean, so, you know, we were talking about this with the Star Trek Discovery. Some shows are doing a really good job of kind of like the commentary on the current political world.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone has nailed the kind of some of the subtler points of what was so infuriating about the 2016 election that BoJack Horseman did this time. Like, even down to when Mr. Peanut Butter concedes.
Yes.
And he's like, "You're not helping me." I was like, oh, God, I'm going to have flashbacks.
Wendy Malick,
that's it. Yes.
To, from Just Shoot Me and a variety of other things.
I really liked the story with the governor just gets more and more ridiculous. It starts off with him like being, well, I'll challenge him to a downhill slalom race, which of course is ridiculous, but then it comes out that the governor is a downhill slalom champion, and even that isn't going to help. And yeah, that they go through so many iterations of, well, we're still going to put Mr. Peanut Butter up for governor.
Yeah.
And I love Paul F. Tompkins, Mr. Peanut Butter, because Paul F. Tompkins, he usually plays the sort of, you know, dour and cynical guy.
Yeah, so he's usually the outcast.
For him to play this sort of upbeat, happy Mr. Peanut Butter just kills me every time.
It's solid. So the series opens with, of course, last season ended in a pretty dark place.
Yeah.
BoJack had left. We saw him staring off at the wild Mustangs and presumably thinking about peacing out. And we open up this season not really knowing, you know, where
what
he is.
What happened to him, yeah.
Yeah, to the extent that Diane is sincerely concerned.
Yeah.
And nobody has seen him. And quite frankly, that's not better. Couldn't be better than it is for Todd.
Yeah.
Todd's character flourishes as soon as BoJack Horseman isn't there to.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It really does.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of gets us going down the storyline of where we learn more about his mom and his family.
Yeah.
And because that's where he's been.
Yeah. Yeah. The story of his family and the sort of family fortune and all that kind of stuff, and like seeing what his mom, and then we circle back to it because of her dementia.
Yeah.
And then we see, you know, all the things that she's been through. Like, they really flesh that character out in a couple episodes, and those episodes are both really good, but also really harrowing.
Yeah. It's interesting because one of the things, just the level of care that's put into this show, and not just the, like, you know, the great animation and the background jokes, that there's always something interesting going on, sort of like Arrested Development. Always, yeah. Mm-hmm. You could just still like freeze a frame of Arrested Development. There was always four things going on that was interesting or funny or poignant or good commentary or something.
Right.
So not just the care that's going into those types of things, but also it seems pretty likely that at least BoJack's grandmother, who mm-hmm. had the lobotomy, yeah. we're not going to hear about her anymore. They invested right. all of this character development,
yeah.
all of this love, all of this like sadness
yeah.
into this character. She's gone.
Yeah.
We've now moved BoJack Horseman's mom to a nursing home.
Yeah.
I don't think she's going to become some kind of central character.
No, I don't think so either.
Her dementia isn't going to go away.
Yeah.
So this like the last two episodes
yeah.
all devoted to this character, and now we have, as the audience, are left sitting there knowing that she's just in a nursing home someplace.
Yeah. yeah.
That this round, fleshed out character is just rotting in a nursing home someplace.
Yeah.
Damn, BoJack Horseman.
The other story I really liked is the story of Hollyhock, his alleged daughter.
Yes.
Played by Aparna Nancherla, who, did you interview her, Les?
No.
Okay. I thought maybe she was, I know she's been on Inside Amy Schumer. She's done a bunch of different comedy shows, and I knew you had talked to somebody.
No, it was Kulap.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was thinking.
It's also connected to Paul. It's also how I talked to Paul F. Tompkins.
That's what I was thinking, is Paul F. Tompkins. I thought she might have been in that crew. But anyway, she's been on a bunch of Comedy Central. She's a comedian, and she plays Hollyhock. And Hollyhock, the great, like, she is BoJack, basically. She's like the female BoJack, but she's yeah. a little more, she's younger, and so she's a little more upbeat.
Yeah, well, she's not bitter yet. She yeah. hasn't been given yeah. everything and had it taken right. away. She didn't have a show back in the 90s that was very popular.
Right, and also, she doesn't, you know, she doesn't know if BoJack's her dad, but that doesn't matter, because she has eight dads and a polyamorous, whatever they called that. That thing
yes.
killed me. And when
good.
We see all eight dads, that paid off beautifully. But the really great thing is the way they tie that into the dementia thing.
Yeah.
And did you catch it? Because when they showed Henrietta having a baby, I'm like, oh, so he's got a sister. That's got to pay off somewhere. But I didn't make the connection.
Yeah. So that's kind of when I guess I started piecing it together. But
yeah.
it did take a little bit. But yeah, once we knew that Henrietta yeah. had a baby, then yeah.
you figured that's who that was.
Yeah, I knew yeah. I knew that yeah. right away. Yeah,
I didn't put it together yet.
Well, because also I think somebody they were already dropping clues about, like, yeah. oh, well, like on like the faux Maury Povich show or
right.
whatever they were watching, where it's like, oh, well, it doesn't mean you're the dad. So yeah, so once I knew Henrietta had a kid, then
yeah.
I was then I think is when
yeah
we should have known.
I really liked that story. I thought they did a great job of that character, mm-hmm. and I thought there's so many easy things they could have done where, you know, BoJack's just a bad person, or he gets, you know, he's a bad influence on her, but he was really trying.
Yeah.
And I really liked the way that story played out.
Well, and then they had the whole thing. So Hollyhock comes to live with BoJack, thinking at first that that's her father.
Mm-hmm.
We come to find out that that is her half-brother.
Okay.
Henrietta, who is there,
yep.
Who is BoJack's mom's maid at the time,
yeah.
Has an affair with BoJack's dad. And so Henrietta and BoJack's dad have a kid, and that's his sister, Hollyhock.
Right.
And so she comes to live with BoJack, and BoJack is really trying.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it still goes bad. And one of the reasons it goes bad is that BoJack's mom is kind of obsessed with women being thin.
Mm-hmm.
And so she starts drugging Hollyhock with
yeah.
essentially amphetamines to help her, to air quotes, help her lose weight. And of course, nobody knows this except the dementia having grandmother. And so when you find out that she was the one doing that, you're as angry and mad and realize the abusive situation that BoJack has been in.
Right.
And then that's when the show drops on you, her background.
Yeah.
And you go, that kind of like the way that you would have felt about a character like Jamie or something in Game of Thrones. Yeah. You go from being so mad to being like, fuck.
Suddenly you get it. You understand where they're coming from. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't excuse any of the behavior.
No, no. Yeah.
But dude.
Yeah.
Damn.
I also love the way that this show does. There's two things I want to mention. One is this show pays off background gags and long-running gags like nobody else. Like the final episode pays off the Bridge to Hawaii gag that's been going in there. And Todd's dentist clowns
yes.
in a way you could never have imagined.
The only thing, so when the Bridge to Hawaii becomes like part of this plot between yeah. Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter, it reminded me of in a, oh God, it just like, not Shaun of the Dead, but
one of the other Edgar Wright movies?
Hot
yeah.
Fuzz? Or?
Yeah, Hot Fuzz. At the end of Hot Fuzz, how there's like Aaron Erickson or whatever yeah. is in the phone book. I was like, damn, yes, that kind of like long yeah. play on a joke.
Yeah.
Worth it.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention is the voice cast for this show is insane. I am looking through the rundown and we've got Andre Brower plays the governor. Jane Krakowski is here. Matthew Broderick is BoJack's father. Harvey Fierstein is a ovulation reminder watch. Zach Braff plays Zach Braff. Jessica Biel plays Jessica Biel, the ex-wife, and very game for playing a...
She has a good sense of humor about herself. Jessica Biel is a good person.
Say, one of the limited things I'd heard about this show without having watched it was that Jennifer Biel is insane on it.
Yeah, she's really has a good sense of humor about herself.
Jessica Biel.
Jessica Biel.
Hannibal Buress, Martin Short, RuPaul, Kristen Bell, Kristen Chenoweth, Rami Malek... I mean,
yes, I got Kristen Schaal in the main cast.
So yeah,
all the Kristens covered.
Like, yeah,
it's
the Kristens.
It's a crazy voice cast. It is really good. And the people playing themselves, Zach Braff and Jessica Biel in particular, in that episode where there's the sinkhole, are killer. And I defy you to find me another show where Jessica Biel decides to cannibalize another star.
Yeah, I challenge you to find me a better sinkhole story in whatever disaster movie you're currently thinking of. This is better.
And the other thing I wanted to say is the thing I really like this season is that while Princess Caroline winds up in sort of a dark place, BoJack gets sort of a sweet, happy ending, which I think maybe the first time that's happened.
He does. I mean, honestly, it's looking up for both him and Todd.
Yeah. Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter are fucked, but you
yeah.
know.
That had a really, a really sad ending.
Yeah. So we love this.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at this point, it's just like voices adding to the choir.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, everybody loves BoJack for good reason.
Yeah.
And I super recommend it. I don't know if it's good for your liver to watch it all in one day like I did.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. I space it out.
Yeah.
Space it out.
This seems like a show I should give another shot to, but in small doses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I would agree.
And speaking of space.
What?
Let's talk about Star Trek Discovery.
Wait, are you going to look up the Stardate real quick?
I don't do that. That's for you Star Trek Discovery nerds.
Yeah, that's why we have Clyde.
Yeah, no. Do that over on the Discovery Poo.
On Discovery,
Discovery Poo. So I want to know where everyone is Star Trek fandom-wise. Like, Les, where are you on Star Trek fandom? What have you watched? What have you
seen? I did not grow up watching Star Trek.
Okay.
I grew up loving Star Wars.
For a second, I thought you were going to say, I didn't grow up liking Star Trek. I grew up loving it.
No,
I was like,
no.
Yes!
But one of my best friends growing up was the kid that had like the case upon case upon case of VHS tapes where he had taped all of the Next Generation episodes. Like Scott had a freakishly complete. I think he's now an aerospace engineer.
Kids today don't know how it was.
Oh yeah, no, the struggle was real. Scott had a lot of VHS tapes.
That dude was either going to become an aerospace engineer or live in a cabin.
Yes,
alone,
or kill a lot of people.
You can do all these things.
Why not both?
Yeah, don't limit yourself.
Believe in your dreams.
So I didn't grow up watching Star Trek. I loved Star Wars as a kid. I never really got into Star Trek. I'd seen the movies, the Wrath of Khan ear slug thing.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put a helmet on. That was my shower scene from Psycho as a kid. Like, I wouldn't put a helmet on for or any kind of hat that would cover my ears. It was as bad as the clown in Poltergeist.
Because you were worried about the brain worms.
Jesus, like something. Yeah. I mean, that's just horrible. It still freaks me out as an adult. But it was Star Trek. Like, it just never grabbed me. Like, when they announced Voyager and Deep Space Nine, and I gave them an episode or two.
Okay.
Space.
Yeah.
And went, it's boring space. And I never, it just never grabbed me. I never got into it. The more I have talked to friends of mine and read about, like, the premise of Star Trek.
Yeah.
I love it. And my enjoyment of Star Wars crashed, burned, died, rose from the dead. I stabbed it through the brain. Fuck that franchise. So I was left with this huge void of space nerddom, and Trek is the other half of that coin. So when all the new Trek movies came out, I went and saw the new Trek movie, and I loved it. And then I watched about half of my old school Trek friends hate it, and half were fine with it. I couldn't tell you the plot of any of those three Trek movies. The new ones. I mean, they were fun, but I they got done and I went, what did we watch? Was there a thing that happened that's mattered, that stuck? They didn't grab me. They were fun movies.
So your movie Star Trek for the most part.
For the most part. That said, I went back after the new Trek movies and watched a bunch of original series episodes and then the animated series, which is same voice cast and scripts they couldn't do with the...
Okay, all right.
You have an actual alien instead of Spock sometimes. And
okay.
And those are great. Like, it really hooked me. Like, by the time they started announcing Discovery, I was on board of, like, don't fuck this up. There are aspirational things about Star Trek that, like, you need to stick with. This show is valuable, different from other genre space shows because of what it's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's... They're lucky they don't end up with Fraggle Rock every time because it's that aspirational.
Yeah.
Like, the Federation is so far-flung out there, utopia. I love it. Like, when we're getting nothing but dystopia after dystopia after dystopia. Like, oh, you got a property that's not that cool?
Yeah.
We could cool it up by making the whole thing gray and metal and shitty.
Yeah.
Like, let's dystopia it up and up the box office. And I love that we're doing new Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, I need something fucking hopeful on my TV, please.
So I'm definitely I've never watched much of the original series. I've seen a couple episodes in college. I watched all the movies.
You dabbled in Star Trek in college?
I dabbled in Star Trek in college a little bit.
Who didn't?
I was triple curious. And then I watched all the movies, and some of them are good and some of them are terrible. And then I watched Next Generation because I was into the movies. I'm like, oh, I'll jump in on this. And I dropped in and out. But there were times, like when they did Best of Both Worlds, the Borg episode, like I was super on board. And I wound up liking the end of it. And I've watched bits and pieces of Deep Space Nine. I watched a couple episodes of Enterprise. I watched a couple episodes of Voyager. I would call myself a pretty casual fan of Star Trek. On the scale, depending on the scale, I guess. On some scales, I'm a hardcore Trek fan.
On the warp scale.
On the warp scale.
Yeah, yeah. What warp are you?
We have warp or trans warp.
Oh.
Birds. Nerds.
Boom.
A fucking nerd.
But Ashley, for those who have not listened to the Star Trek Discovery podcast, where's your Star Trek level?
So, you know, everything is relative.
Yeah.
So on the Star Trek podcast, I am a casual fan.
Yeah.
I'm a super big fan of Star Trek Next Generation.
Okay.
My favorite captain is Picard.
Yes.
My favorite character is Data. And my favorite Star Trek episode is one called Data's Day, where we basically just follow Data around around the Enterprise, and it's a great episode. If you're not a Star Trek fan because you came for space, where space, it might not be your favorite episode. Right. Kind of in classic Star Trek fiction. It's just sort of about what he does on a day-to-day basis. And one of the main things is that Data, if you don't know, is an android in the Next Generation series, which is the one that came out in the 90s. It's a particularly cheerful, sort of character-driven version of Star Trek.
Yeah.
He does things like try to help his friend Worf, who's a Klingon, pick out a wedding present. Being a Klingon and an android, this is a challenge that they're faced with often human culture.
Yeah.
They engage in some witty banter. You know, it's this kind of stuff. And so that kind of optimistic, cheerful version of a very science-driven, curiosity-driven, kind world is mm-hmm. what really draws me into Star Trek. And what I really like, I like some of the old movies, not all of them. I like the new ones as well. I thought they were fun. I feel like they're a little bit more in the vein of the original series, or a little more action-y.
Yeah.
But some of my friends who are more on the Star Wars side of the argument really went for those films, and then it was something we could do together. So it was fun.
I knew friends that had actively not liked Trek. That liked those films.
Yeah.
Which is actually what made me go, oh crap, I have some Trek friends that probably hate this.
Yeah, for sure. And then a little bit of the original series.
So this series, at least so far, these first two episodes, it's not optimistic exploration Trek. This is sort of a darker Trek, and yet I think we all liked it.
Yeah.
They're setting it, 10 years before?
10 years before the original Kirk's series. Time, yeah.
And I like that the Federation is at the aspirational place that we expect them to be.
Sure.
But it's early enough on that they haven't – it had never occurred to me that most of what I think of in my personal experience as Trek I've seen has been after they already dealt with Klingons and got some level of understand at least
right
who y'all are and where we ought to stay away from and that kind of stuff. And it just didn't occur to me that, like, oh, crap, there had to be a first time where these ideals that always get slapped back at Trekkies of, like, oh, sure, you have a government that doesn't, you know, just wants to be nice to everybody and explore and everybody's curious and science and everything's wonderful and utopia and that's never going to work. I'm really looking forward to a show where the Federation that comes out of this, whatever happens with the Klingons, is going to have to be the Federation.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have to find a way to tell the story of how these people keep these ideals.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. One of the best things, I don't remember who said it, someone on my Facebook or something said that if Star Trek, the original series, is sort of the Cold War, it is, you know, it's the Klingons are the Russians and the Federation is America, and it's in a sort of a Cold War period. This is the World War II that leads to that Cold War. So this is the... this is the actual, like, outright war between the Klingons and the Federation, the war of ideals. And the thing is, we know they're not going to, like, get to a point where, like, the Klingons aren't going to get wiped out. They're going to reach some sort of, like, detente of sorts. And I don't know exactly how that happens, but I'm fascinated to see a sort of Federation at war story, which I am not a big fan of the new movies because I find them too action movie-ish. And I thought maybe that would be a problem for me with Discovery, but I like this setup.
Well, and by the time I got done watching these episodes, it occurred to me it would feel disingenuous to me to act like there's never been a conflict against the Federation.
Right.
Like they've never been challenged on this shit.
Right. It's true. And what I really want to see is how are they going to do the Discovery aspect of all this? Because these first two episodes are basically a prologue. Like we don't see the Discovery. We don't see the crew. We see how the main character, Michael Burnham, gets to this point.
That's what I was going to say. These first two episodes is not the show that was advertised or told about at all.
Nope.
Like, at the end of these two episodes, I realized, like, oh, wow, I have no idea what show we're about to watch because episode three is about to be completely different than what we just saw in a lot of regards.
Yeah, although that is how the original series starts.
Yeah, doesn't it start with
Pike? That's true.
It starts on a different ship with Pike.
But that was also because it was a pilot and it didn't go or something, right? Like,
I actually don't know the history of that.
Either way, it's a nice callback.
Yeah.
You know the Trek writers on this were aware of
that. It's canon.
The other thing I think that's really interesting about that is that they don't actually need to show the whole crew and the ship and all that. What they need to do is convince a huge number of fans, many of whom are probably not Star Trek fans already, that this is a show worth their time.
Yeah.
So all they had to do was good characters, good action, good plot, and I think they delivered on all that.
Yeah. I only had one moment where when Burnham decides to go check the object out.
Yeah.
There's four or five things about this situation that I loved, but the one thing that bothered me, they didn't sell me enough on why you would send your first officer in this.
You guys talked about this on Star Trek Pod, too.
I love that you're an exploring vessel and you've come all this way and you're on literally the edge of Federation space and there shouldn't be anything. So if you see something, this is literally your job. You have to go look at it.
Yeah.
You don't have to send your first mate in a tinfoil suit like thrown out of the fucking
You
hatch.
Also, if there's a deadly Klingon vessel, don't have to beam your captain and first officer over there to capture. But
so I would like to take this one.
Yes, by all means. Yes.
Yeah. So, In the Star Trek world, the more dangerous the situation is, the more members of top command you send. It's so true. My question wasn't so much, hey, if we're going to go onto the first Klingon vessel, storm it, and take back a prisoner. First Klingon vessel we've seen in since, like, what, 100 years? Since Enterprise?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one we've seen since Enterprise, storming the joint. I get that you take the captain.
Yeah.
I get that you take the first mate.
Why didn't we take
the first science officer as well?
Yes.
I mean, we had that red-haired lady who doesn't have a name yet at helm. She clearly could have taken over the captain's chair.
Give her the job.
It was a strange decision.
Do you think that security in the Star Trek universe are like union guys? They're just here to watch the cells. Like, we don't actually go and do anything. It's like they're paid to stay there, and there's the contract, and they just don't go out over anyone. Is that why they always send the captain? Like, security just doesn't do their job. That's it.
Yeah, so security in the Star Trek world are forgiving folk.
Yeah.
They're also not athletes.
Well, in the Next Generation, like, their first security officer was Tassa Yar, who got killed by some weird alien. And the next one was Worf, who got his ass kicked on the regular.
Yeah, which I will say that the Worf could take a beating, though.
He
was a Klingon. That was why he was good at it.
Yeah, but fighting back would have been an even better skill for a security officer to have.
It is, and usually he was a very skilled fighter. Yes. It was only in his role as security officer. Any other time, he did a fabulous job.
Is it possible it's Federation training? They're so peace-oriented that they train their security to be the least aggressive possible, and that's why if you want something done, you send someone who hasn't had the security training, because security training is don't ever shoot ever.
You probably have better luck being killed by the brig computer. Like, I, her having to argue her way out of the brig computer was cool.
One of the best scenes.
Nice. I enjoyed that. I also really enjoyed, in terms of, like, is Star Trek supposed to be actiony or not?
Yeah.
The kid that runs in when she's in the brig and breaks down.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he just, like, what do you mean, like, suit up and get in formation? I am not a soldier.
Yeah.
Like, I loved his freak out.
Yeah, I did too.
It was good.
I realize that there's a controversy about something about the Klingon's head bones changing. I didn't look into it. I don't care.
As a Star Trek fan, I agree with you.
Yeah. I fucking loved the Herbert Dune level houses of Klingons and their untouchable cast, basically, of albino looking Klingons and who don't have houses, and like the Klingon faith of I know Star Trek always tries to nail, like you said, the original series is Cold War.
Yeah.
You know, it always tries to nail a little bit of political. So I watched a sci-fi show where there's a whole federation of a bunch of people who really want to move into the future and do progressive things and reform huge whole humanitarian systems into an explorational, aspirational curiosity, science, learning. We can be better. And then there's this huge group of people who want to remain traditional and make Klingon great again.
Yes.
And they will hold, like, they wear their dead on the outside of the. Okay, that was fucking cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
How creepy are their ships covered in sarcophaguses?
Dead Klingons,
Like, I got done watching it and went, and they're treating them with respect. Like, they're not, the show is not bashing the Klingons for being Klingon.
No, actually, in fact, we're seeing, and apparently we're going to be seeing the show from their point of view as well, and I think that's really cool.
No, I think I also loved seeing who invented, even though I'm glad we don't see how, they don't hand wave away the science of it, but who invented cloaking technology.
Yeah.
And that the Federation, because I loved it in Star Trek, I've always loved that the Federation's fucking baffled by this. Like, I love that we don't cloak our ships.
No.
Yeah, we don't know how.
Klingons know how.
Yeah.
And the scene where even the other Klingon houses are doubting T'Kuvma, like that it's a wives' tale rumor from like his zealots that he can make his ships turn invisible.
Yeah,
and then the scene of destruction when he unveils that was impressive for any space show.
Yeah,
I don't care what genre show you're watching, Trek or not. That was an awesome scene.
Yeah, I've been doubting this since it. There's been so much
against it.
There's been so much behind the scenes. Like, Brian Fuller left, and
Fuller wrote the teleplay of this.
Yeah, and like, and Nicholas Meyer wrote and directed the second episode, and that's the guy from all the good Star Trek movies, Wrath of Khan and Voyage Home.
I'm a little worried that we're getting the training crew, and then when we staff this thing local, it's going to be a restaurant that just drops off. I grew up in a really small town. We would get new restaurants that were staffed from the area, and then we'd staff them local, and you'd stop eating there.
Well, we know Lieutenant Saru is going to be on the Discovery, and that's great.
Yeah,
because
he does
he's
a fabulous
so
job.
Good. And I think that the doctor we saw for like 5 seconds, who was on 30 Rock and a couple other shows, Weeds, I think, he's going to be on there. So there's a couple people we've seen.
We got Jason Isaacs coming on
board. And Jason Isaacs is coming on board. And I have a guess as to what the show's going to look like based on the, like, this season on Star Trek Discovery thing they showed us. Mm-hmm. But we really don't know. And I'm okay with that. I am okay with what they showed us. I have faith that we're in good hands, and that is not how I felt before this thing aired. I really thought it was going to be a disaster.
That looked so classy and so good.
Yeah.
I realize they released them separately because they wanted everybody to talk about it, and people are going to geek out. The titles were gorgeous.
Yeah.
I bitch about how long and slow title sequences are
all
the time. And Netflix is killing me on this shit.
Yeah.
I really haven't enjoyed the Marvel Netflix title sequences as they've just kept going.
They gave you that skip button. So.
Yeah. This though, the sketches, the plans of like the schematics, it got that that slow callback to the like kind of calm theme music of the original series. Because it stood out to like watching the original series stands out against other television. I mean, not just because of how old it is and being a different era of TV, but there's something to that. That low tone starting and the
that like loungy.
Yeah, and like these are the and you know that like it's not Jack Bauer screaming that like the president's fucked and we've got to shoot people. Like it's somebody going, we have 5 years to go look at everything we can look at in the universe. Because why not?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm down for that show.
Yeah,
and,
watch that.
And I felt like Discovery, even though I knew it wasn't going to be tonally quite like that, I loved that it started with that same calm, slow, like, let's get you in the mood for some science.
Yeah.
And we'll go out to the edge of Federation space and we'll look at some weird shit.
So I want to go back and talk about that opening, because the general feeling in the Star Trek pod was that was god-awful.
I didn't like the opening sequence. So when they
when she draws the thing in the sand with her feet.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't like
when she drives. Yeah.
Yeah, where they go to Tatooine.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck are they doing on Tatooine?
I kind of did like that because I like starting in the middle of like this is what they do. They go and they help alien civilizations, and then when there's a problem, she does something cute like draw the Star Trek. I like the sort of the cuteness of meeting these two. Plus, as someone pointed out online, the show just sort of aced the Bechdel test right away. It was two women talking about
their
space
jobs.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked that. And
I
so,
did think it was a little too cutesy that she drew this.
It is 100% too cutesy. I was in for it.
That said, the aliens they're helping were throwaway gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, movie quality. Yeah. It was weird.
Yeah. They were so impressive and creepy. Yeah. And then they didn't need to pay. Like,
You know what's funny about those aliens? That's what Doug Jones looks like without makeup.
So yeah. It's just Doug Jones.
It's
on
just
an
Doug Jones. Yeah.
They went to craft services and like Jones is walking around the background.
Yeah, like, oh, shoot that. Shoot that.
You
yeah.
Doug by the well, shoot that.
But yeah, I think we're all like, this is like Game of Thrones, Westworld. I can't wait to watch this every Sunday kind of thing for me.
I'm excited to have not just a new Trek show. I mean, I watched a lot of Enterprise because I love Scott Bakula, but not because Enterprise was really, really
We all love Scott Bakula.
Watchable.
I thought for a second you were going to say we all loved Enterprise. I was like, wow.
That is not true.
That is just not
But we all love Scott Bakula.
True.
But we
that
tried
because
of Scott Bakula. yeah, and so I'm
like
really thrilled.
It's like your friend's pet project.
It is. You're like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, God,
nobody tell him.
You're about to leave the office, and you know your friend's band's playing this Friday at the local TGI Fridays, because they always are, and you want to get out before you're invited, right? But we didn't make it, and now we have to fucking watch Enterprise.
So I'm not just thrilled to have – I mean, I was happy to have a new Trek show, because I also – I like more genre space shows, and I know several friends that this is legit important to them. Like, there needs to be a new Trek show.
Right.
How are we wasting the popularity of these movies and don't have this on TV?
Yeah.
But it's also good.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm excited. All right, guys. Thanks for listening with us this week. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Les.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you to Ghostly Godfather Grant, who is not here with us right now.
You know what? It got a little touch and go there for a while, but we made it.
We pulled
through.
It out.
We did.
There was so many.
Oh, shit. I should hit record.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.